Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, dear saints of God. Good afternoon, and welcome to another weekly edition of the much-anticipated End Time News Report with the one and only Sister Marie. Well, our sister is already in studio, and we are ready to get started. But before we do, I have some announcements, as always. Now, saints, if you are in need of prayer, send us your prayer request at Power of Prayer 2018 at gmail.com. Power of Prayer 2018 at gmail.com. I promise, I give you my pledge that all prayer requests will remain confidential, and only those of us who pray every day will read your prayer request and pray over it, asking the Lord to intervene and to do the impossible on your behalf. I also have a praise report. We have been praying for Sister Elena, the daughter of our beloved Sister Linda, who went home to be with the Lord, and she is reporting to work this week. The doctor has given her the okay to return to work this week and see how she feels, but she got the green light from the doctor, and she's only going to go one day in this week just to see if she can handle at least a day's work. And then, based on that, she'll talk to the doctor, and then the doctor will green light her to do a few other things. So that's a wonderful, wonderful praise report. Don't forget tomorrow, Sister AJ is going to be in studio to continue her fantastic series on Jesus and Hollywood, a series you don't want to miss. And, of course, if you're looking to be trained for the ministry and you don't have any funds, well, we have the school for you. It's called the International Institute of Biblical and Ministerial Studies. It is a Bible school that charges no registration fee, no tuition fee. We don't sell you textbooks, although we use a lot of textbooks in the class. We read from a lot of textbooks in the class, and it's free of charge. If you'd like to register for the school, email us at iibms2020@gmail.com, iibms2020@gmail.com. The moment you send us the email, you will automatically be registered, and then a nice young man by the name of Miguel Rivera will contact you via email. He's the registrar, and he will tell you what you need to do in order to start your first class, and after that, keep going to class. Again, iibms2020@gmail.com. Let us know if you are interested. Well, it's raining, it's pouring, it's dark and gloomy, and it's going to be this way for 6 days. I looked at the forecast, and it's going to be raining and pouring for 6 days in a row. And so that said, I'm glad to be indoors. I'm glad to be not sitting on a tractor trying to, you know, work out in the field. I am so blessed of the Lord to be working indoors, nice and comfy, sitting in a wonderful chair my wife got me for my birthday, and sitting here and just looking at the board and ready to push buttons for our dear Sister Marie. Sister Marie, how are you doing today? How are you
today? I'm doing good.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I look at my fellow farmers. Well, they're not my fellow farmers. They're my fellow citizens. But I look at my fellow citizens who work out on the field, and they're going to have a tough 6 days because it's going to be pouring. And I'm wondering, did you have this rain? Because you always get, whatever you get, we get the leftovers. So
yes, we had the same thing. Same thing.
Okay. All righty. So,
It's on and off. I mean, it does, you know, you think it's going to be a nice day. And then, you know, you get the rain and the clouds.
Yeah.
Either, you know, some, depending, certain areas get rain and then other areas don't. So it's kind of, you know, it's gloomy. It can be sunny 1 minute and then it's gloomy for hours. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, it's been raining.
Know.
It's been raining hard, and there's no letting up. But, you know, in driving this weekend through the countryside, I noticed that the creeks were very low on water. So this will do the creeks some good.
Right.
Yeah,
good for the wells, too.
Yeah.
You know.
You can't go canoeing. You can't go, you know, you can't use your little boat, your little rowboat. If it's going to be bumping against rocks. So now this will elevate, you know, the water level. And you know, dads and sons and granddads and grandsons can go out fishing and, you know, do what you do. But, again, you're going to have to wait for all the rain to be gone before you can do that. Because nobody wants to sit in a boat while it's raining.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to do that. So
I think our – I just I just want to say, I think our audio is a little shaky today from what I heard with the music and what I'm hearing now. There's a little bit of interference coming in. So just, you know, we'll see how that goes.
I hear you perfect. I hear you perfect. I didn't know that we were having some problems with the audio. Okay.
On your end, I can hear it. You know, and it could be the weather.
Right.
Could be anything at that point, but I can hear a little interference. I'm not sure if anybody else can, but I just wanted to bring that up in case we lose each other.
You're coming in loud and clear, so I hear you perfectly.
Yep.
I hear you perfectly. So,
okay.
All right, Lord. Okay,
sound
Jesus.
Check.
Yes, Jesus. Help us out, Lord. We
want to
get this. We want to get this broadcast in, and we've been talking about the Great Reset. And boy, what a debacle over there in Kabul, Afghanistan.
What a mess.
What a mess.
Yeah.
And listen. That's one country that they're trying to do a reset on. One country. And look at, it's just deplorable. Right? The one country that they're trying to help. Can you imagine trying to pull off a global reset?
Oh, boy. Yeah. It is a mess, isn't it? It is.
Sure.
This whole thing's a mess. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, when we played that audio last week with Michael O'Fallon. From the Sovereign Nation, it was called the Global Brain. And, you know, we didn't have time to talk about the things that we learned from the audio. About the fourth industrial revolution, which is the Great Reset. That's, you know, going from analog to digital, you know, and that includes us. We're going from analog people.
Sure.
So, you know, so I'm glad you started with that because, you know, talking about things going on around the world, because this is what it's about, this fourth, you know, revolution. That the industrial revolution that they're bringing forward. And did you find that interesting? I have a question. Did you find, is there anything in particular that you saw that stood out to you, you know, or that you found strange or didn't know?
Yeah, listen, Mr. O'Fallon is, I can listen to that guy all day long.
Mm-hmm.
When I get into my car, I'm stuck with one radio station. And I got to listen to Glenn Beck, who gets annoying. I have to listen to Sean Hannity, who's very annoying. And it's not their politics that are annoying. It's just they don't have any radio grace. You know, O'Fallon has a voice, has a presentation for radio. He's just got a natural knack for it.
Yes.
And of course, the content that he's presenting content that I haven't heard anywhere else, right? I mean, if we're honest.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
If we're honest. And the beautiful thing is that we do a lot of Bible stuff here, but O'Fallon takes things that are happening in society. And then he shows how it ties to the Bible, even though it's not. You see, listen, the big brain, the global brain is not in the Bible. You're not going to find that term in the Bible. But in his presentation, you can say, oh, I see the global brain in the Bible. I see how this ties to end times.
Yep.
So He's very illuminating. He's a and like Virgil and our other brother, Daryl.
Daryl.
They too have a knack for what they do, and that's what makes the show wonderful. But Mr. O'Fallon is he's cutting edge, you know.
Yes.
And I'm not. I don't know the man, so it's not like I'm being flowery to him or, you know, but I have to give recognition and kudos to who deserves it. And anytime you pull up one of his videos for the show, I mean, the guy's just brilliant. He's just brilliant, right?
And trust me, I went through a lot of people, bro, to bring, you know, the Great Reset out. And
right.
I'm telling you, I was drawn to him, too. I could listen to him. I could lay down and listen to him. And I almost fell asleep a couple of times. I mean, he's that smooth, and yet you're getting it. I mean, you're putting the pieces together in the Bible. You know, we're looking for kingdoms and kings. I mean, he can bring that, you know, joining together, turning their kingdoms over to the beast, all this stuff.
Right.
And he's putting this together without saying that, you know.
Correct.
You can see it as he's
right.
saying it. Your mind's going, okay, how does this go along with Scripture? And you're
correct.
Thinking about it, and you start putting the pieces together. So you're
right
with that, you know.
Yeah, because, again, you're not going to find the term the global brain in the Bible. But
correct.
When he's doing the presentation, you say, oh, this Bible verse goes with what he's saying. This other Bible verse
yep.
goes with what he's saying. And that's what makes
yep.
it fascinating. Right?
Yep. That's it. That's it. You know,
and,
well, a lot of this, think about it, a lot of this is getting rid of gas-powered products. Now, you think about everything that you have that runs, you know, the lawnmower, your car, heat.
Right. Sure.
You know, if you get rid of all that, I mean, what's, you know, for what, electric and battery-operated? Come on. We're going backwards.
Well, here's the thing.
You know.
Here's the thing. If you go, let's say to Lowe's or to Home
yeah.
Depot, they will show you an electric chainsaw, a battery operated chainsaw. I say, no, I want the gas one. I like gas thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when they say chainsaws, I guess they're trained to kind of push on you the battery charged. Chainsaw.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The same thing with a leaf blower. You know, if you're
uh-huh.
working with leaves in the back, and okay, they don't sell you the gas operated leaf blower. They try to sell you a battery, the one that has a charger.
Right.
Okay. And so now I can see everybody pushing towards battery operated.
Yeah.
On everything, right?
Yep.
We just got a vacuum cleaner. I happen to shop at a place called Ollie's. The main message at Ollie's is good stuff cheap. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've been through three vacuum cleaners in a matter of months. Okay.
Right.
So my kids and my wife tell me we're not going to Ollie's this time. You're going to have to, you can't be an Ebenezer Scrooge this time. We're going to Walmart, you know, to get out. And I said, but
yeah.
Ollie's sells brand new stuff. They're not selling old stuff. Okay, so we go to
right.
Walmart, and what do they have? They have a battery-operated vacuum cleaner, a cordless. There's no more cord. You put the battery into the electric socket. It charges overnight.
Uh-huh.
Then the next day, you can vacuum wherever you want. You don't need it. You see, so that's what they're trying to do now. They're trying to. Now, of course, no vacuum cleaner operates on gas. There are no gas-operated vacuum cleaners. But you see, what they're trying to do is they're trying to get you to think now battery. Everything is battery.
Yes.
They're trying to even eliminate the electric cord. Go to battery now.
Right.
Why? Because it's a form of indoctrination now that even your car now, you're going to have to charge your car overnight if you want to go on a road trip because they're going to eliminate gas.
Right.
You see? It's just that
yep.
indoctrination. So we're all starting to think like the elites. The elites,
mm-hmm.
they
the
think
global
of the plan.
Brain, right?
Right.
The
they're
global brain.
Exactly. And then they're trying to teach us to think like them, and
yeah.
you know, and it's just the way it's going to be. So they want windmills now, and they want, you know, solar panels,
yeah.
and listen, I'm not against anything. If you want solar panels on your house, God bless you. If you want to knock out
yeah.
the listen, the most annoying thing I have each and every month is when I get the light bill, is them telling me that I'm using more light than anybody else. That annoys me. I, because it's none of their business.
Yes.
So if I can eliminate that little notice every month, I'll go to solar panels if I have to.
Right, right.
But
I mean, they're expensive. What they're putting forth, batteries are expensive. You know, if you have to buy batteries, big batteries for anything, it's expensive. And,
absolutely.
You know, and these things that they're, you know, to supposedly under the environment to save the environment and stuff, that's expensive. Solar panels, are you kidding? You know, that's a lot of money. And
because
everything
they're made out of silver.
Is so high.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, solar panels requires silver.
Really?
Silver's a precious metal.
Now that
silver,
I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah, silver is a precious metal.
No wonder they're expensive.
Right. Exactly. Absolutely.
Wow.
So this is why this is why people are hoarding silver. You know, silver is known as the poor man's gold. If you know, I can't buy an ounce of gold. An ounce of gold is $2,000. I can't. When am I going to be able to cough up $2,000 to buy a gold coin? I can't do that.
Right.
So people, you know, people go and buy a gold, a silver coin for $30. It's the poor man's gold. But all of these solar panels and all, even your computers require silver.
Mm-hmm.
Silver is a great conductor of electricity. So this is why they require silver. China's hoarding silver like it's going out of style.
Right.
And so it's, you know, every chip in your car, every one of those chips that they put in your car or your washing machine requires silver.
And there's a shortage on chips right now for cars. I know several auto companies that are on layoff due to a shortage of chips right now. So it's not, you know, COVID, it's a shortage of chips that's causing a layoff right now. And with the car companies, it affects all of them, you know, down the line.
All the modern cars. Because all the modern cars
have computers in
them. If you
get one in another country,
if
they can't get it in another country, it affects the auto industry over here.
Right.
So, you know, so that's been a problem. That's been an ongoing problem for the last few months. And I know that for a fact. So, and what about getting rid of cash? The legal system, law enforcement, old structures, you know, think about what they're going to replace it with. That was my thought.
Right.
You know,
well,
getting rid of all these things and replacing it.
Dirty cops,
you know,
like cash. Dirty judges like cash. Dirty doctors like cash. Dirty preachers like cash.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Think about the preacher. The preacher doesn't want checks in the offering plate. The preacher would prefer cash. Why? Because the IRS can't tell. The IRS doesn't know how much cash the parishioners put in the offering plate. So let's say they put $1,000 in cash. You take $700 and pocket it and just make a $300 cash deposit. What does the IRS know? The IRS doesn't know anything. Right?
Yeah, that's terrible.
So dirty preachers, dirty accountants, dirty doctors, you know, dirty lawyers, dirty judges, dirty cops who like to get paid under the table and like to operate within a black market, they love cash. And this is why the government is going to, or the big brain is going to, the global brain is going to crack down on cash, because then they're the only criminals left.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
See, the big brain is a criminal, the global brain is a criminal enterprise that has to share the empire with a lot of little criminals. So the big brain is going to shut down the little criminals by eliminating the cash, and they'll stay top dog.
Well, that's what happened with the drugs. I mean, you know, with marijuana
right.
and stuff, I think.
Sure.
You know, they
sure.
just took it over. They took it
they
over
said,
when they legalized it.
We're
going to
legalize it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll legalize it.
So.
And this way, you guys were going to be zombies anyway, so we might as well be the zombie keepers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
So they're the ones, they're the ones now who, you know, keep the zombies in a zombie state, and they're getting paid for it. It's just like lottery. You know, years ago, it was only the mafia that was running numbers. Now each state has their own state lottery.
Right.
They said, no, we can cut out the mafia, and, you know, people can come to us. And they basically put them off. It's like prostitution, the same thing with prostitution. That's the next thing they're going to legalize.
Yeah.
That's the next thing, prostitution. Why? Because they want a cut.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see, all of that is tax revenue. And that's how the government pays all these pensions. With taxes.
Yeah.
That's how they do it.
Well,
so,
you know,
that's the way it works, and then after that, you know, it'll be Antichrist.
Yeah. Well, I think the one that really bothered me was the mixing of technology with humans, you know, and that blending together reminded me of the scripture where the Lord said in Mark 13:20, and except that the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh should be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he has chosen, he has shortened the days. You know, and just a reminder here, the Lord said that in the elect, they're still here.
Right,
a side note. They're still there.
Right.
But, you know, you've always wondered, okay, what is he talking about? A no flesh, does that mean that, you know, there's been so much death, you know, so much killing of one another, or could it mean something else? You know, could there be a deeper meaning to that? And, you know, I've always wondered about that because, you know, it would fit with what they're trying to do also. Not only when Scripture tells us, you know, about, you know, people killing one another. The second horse about, you know, rising up and people killing one another. Well, that would leave no flesh, you know. You have to consider these things, you know. I mean, think about it. And with that technology, that just kind of stood out to me. You know, what are they talking about? And because you don't realize how crazy this is, you know.
Sure.
And I think, you know, we've already seen where they're doing that with animals and things like that. You know, that's in the news. But with humans, you know, that's a little scary. And I don't believe in none of these, you know, conspiracy theories out there. I don't believe in any of that. But I think if certain things line up with Scripture, you can say, wait a minute, you know, we need to look at that. This could mean something here, what they're doing, or it could be an exposed from the Bible. So they also talked about cloud computing. That's invisible stuff. And I already saw that, you know, where they have this chip, and I'm not sure if it's called Eurolink or I don't remember. But why are they doing that? You know?
Yeah.
You have to think that's the blending of technology with humans, and you wonder, well, why would they want to do that? You know?
Well, think about this. You see a commercial, and it's a diabetes commercial, and instead of pricking your finger like most diabetics do, you have a patch in your arm. Right. And then you take your phone and you pass it by the patch and it tells you how your blood sugar is. Right?
Right. Yeah.
That's how it starts.
Mhm.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
You did a show showing some audio on a dog. then now they're using dogs to prowl and you know, walk back and forth to protect the parking lot, right? Okay,
yeah.
So they have that. Okay, they got the Easy Pass. They know where you're going with your Easy Pass. They have your phone, right? They have your the moment you use your card, what happens? All of that information, what you bought, how much it cost, where were you, when did you purchase it, all that goes to the big brain. So you have people watching you, and you don't even realize it.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Everything.
I mean, think about it.
Yes.
I mean, the government knows, the global brain knows where you went on vacation and every stop you made.
Oh, they absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely.
They can tell you your trip better than you can remember.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yep.
That, you see, that's where we're coming to now. See, this is where we are. And if that wasn't scary enough, they can turn on your phone and listen to you without you knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, your computer.
Yep.
My wife, she takes a little piece of tape and that little eye on the computer, she covers all those.
Uh-huh.
She says, they're watching us. Okay. All right. Knock yourself out. She puts, you know.
I'm sorry.
Everybody knows that they can turn that on and they can be watching you without you knowing that they're watching you.
Yeah, the smart
right?
devices are really, you know, when they brought in the smart stuff, that was an advance, you know, that was, you know, it's called smart television, smart this, smart that. Yeah,
right.
You know, every
right.
time the technology goes up, so does the loss of privacy, you know.
Right.
Every time you buy into the technology. You know, you're allowing a little bit more of your freedom or your privacy to go, you know.
They get a warrant. They suspect you. They suspect you of something. They get a warrant from a judge, and they can monitor everywhere you're going in your car.
Yeah.
Without you
now,
knowing
it. You know, I found that fascinating. I told you I was listening to this case. There's a case out there. Going on. I mean, there's a couple of them that I listen to, but there's one going out there. And one of the benefits of listening to this case was the technology that, like, the prosecution is putting forth. The tech.
Right.
And this person had a new truck. And that technology told how many times that person, how many feet the person backed out of their driveway, how many times the door opened, on what side, when the hood went up, touching anything within the car to disable it, what direction the car went in, and then after that, the phone technology picked up the rest, you know, of the trip with the towers, you know, picking up the towers. And one of the things this guy tried to do is put his phone on airplane mode. And now, why did he do that? It's because it was revealed that airplane mode actually gives them less pings on towers.
Right.
And I found that interesting. So I'm learning a lot about technology from listening to the case. But, you know, that was mind-blowing to me. I thought, they can say, okay, look, he lifted the hood at such and such a time. The car backed up 90 feet. It went, you know, left. The brake lights came on. The headlights came on. You know, everything. It's fascinating. I mean, scary but fascinating.
Yeah, if you're going to go commit a crime, you better go on a bicycle. Use a bicycle.
Yeah.
Because,
exactly.
You know, there was a case up here in New York State where a young man was going to college in Albany, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And he drove to Long Island. He was in Albany. He drove to Long Island, murdered his father, and thought he had murdered his mother, but he left her alive. Drove back to the college. And the way they got him, the way they captured him was through the toll booths.
Wow.
That's how they got him. Toll booth pictures.
Wow.
Well, where were you?
Yeah.
I was in my dorm. No, you weren't. Here's a picture of you. And look, it so happens that there's a series of pictures of you from one toll booth to another, and you were in Long Island.
Right.
Oh. You see? It's the Porco case. It's the Porco. P-O-R-C-A. Porco.
Oh, look at it.
Yeah, yeah. And so they caught the kid.
Yeah.
Right? And his mother survived, but she can't remember who the attacker is, the poor woman. And she says, no, it can't be my son. It cannot be my son. He would never do that to his daddy and his mommy.
Yeah.
Well, guess what, mama? He did. He did. And they proved it.
You know,
now, that was 10 years ago. That was 10 years ago.
And they're still looking?
No, I'm saying, can you imagine the technology today, what they can do today? It's incredible what they can do today. Technology has advanced. Your goose is
I got to say, this is good for one side. I mean, if there's criminal activity, you want this technology out there. You know, if there's something criminal going down and it affects your family, you would want this technology. You would want the police to be able to go through the phones and stuff. On the other hand, things are presented as good, but, you know, can it be used the other way around? Absolutely.
Look.
You know, it can be used for anything. But it's usually promoted as good, and there's been cases solved through technology. And you got to give, you know.
It has its benefits, but when you're, my thing is, when you're part of the global brain, like Hunter Biden, and we have evidence, listen, you mean to tell me that they didn't know that Hunter Biden's laptop was his laptop? You mean to tell me that all the images, you mean to tell me you couldn't figure it out, but you found the Porco kid guilty, but you couldn't find Hunter Biden guilty? It only works for the people on the bottom, never for the people on top.
That's it.
The global brain elites will use it on us, but never use it on them.
Yeah, I find it fascinating.
Yeah.
I found that fascinating. It was a good show. But the one thing, you know, when he talked about, they talked about H.G. Wells and Margaret Sanger having a relationship. Now, that I never heard of before. You know, they were in a relationship, and I never knew that. That's weird. That fellows, I'm telling you, that's a weird relationship.
Yeah. Well, again, the elites.
Yeah.
You know, all those elites used to get together, and they're part of secret societies, and, you know, the Illuminati, Jekyll Island, right? I mean, all these people, you know, the Epstein, look at Epstein and Prince Andrew and President Clinton, what they were doing on that private island. You see, that's it. They're strange bedfellows. Strange people.
It is
strange. But that's the world we live in. And the good thing is Jesus is Lord. And he's going to set the record straight soon and very soon. But we are headed, for, you know, the global reset. And you see things like Afghanistan, things that are going on in Haiti, all these different things, the Delta variant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now notice, the Delta, the COVID never attacked children. Now the Delta variant is attacking children. Why is that?
Mm-hmm.
Are they experimenting again? Are they unleashing another kind of pandemic that will attack people that weren't attacked before? What's this about? Right?
Yeah.
Think about it. I mean, that's why I don't show me too much stuff because I start thinking. That's the worst thing
you can do
is thinkers, show me stuff.
Logical thinkers are not welcome in this.
No, they're not.
They're
not.
You know.
Not.
It's crazy.
It is.
You know.
It is.
Well, one of the things for them, the people, one of the things that helps them is emotion and fear. So you need to put that aside in a lot of ways because that actually helps them. You know, you have to put aside, to get the truth, you have to put aside your emotional feelings, you know, any bias you have. That has to be put aside and the fear involved in it in order, because along with that, that's how they can manipulate a group of people is through fear and emotion. And, you know, it's about manipulation.
Look, this is why when Trump was in office, we kept our cool. We didn't give him a thumbs up, but we didn't give him a thumbs down. Why?
No.
Because you can't let yourself be manipulated. See,
the evangelicals
were running up to Trump, and Trump was hoping that the evangelical pastors could manipulate their people into voting for him. But you see, you cannot be manipulated, and you cannot let fear grip your heart. You just can't.
Exactly.
Because then you start doing stupid things. And right now with Biden, the same thing. Fear and manipulation. No. Because now they're using Black Lives Matter, right? I mean, Black Lives Matter is a fear tactic, a fear tool of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Critical race theory. Who is using critical race theory? The Democrats are, right?
Yeah.
They're using that.
Yeah.
And, again, they stir up the pot. They stir people's emotions. Look at you. You're black. They haven't given you reparations yet. You should be mad. You should be fit to be tied. It's the white man's fault. And there you go, and you go and commit a crime only because they stirred you up and you weren't thinking.
Yeah. Exactly.
Fear and manipulation.
Isn't that funny? A lot of my notes on that, you just said a lot of my notes. It's funny because I must be on the same page of my thinking. Some of my notes were exactly what you said. You know, and one of the things on here, too, they were talking about one of the benefits that they want to bring is world peace. Now, for me, that's a red flag because in Ezekiel 13:10, it said, because they have seduced my people saying peace and there was no peace. And one built up a wall and lo, others dabbed it with untempered mortar. That's clay, bro. That's clay. The last kingdom is iron and clay. That's iron mixed with clay. That's what untempered mortar is, you know. And as I told you before, they, you know, in the Middle East, they dab it on the house to make it look good on the outside. That's what it is. You know, it dresses up the outside. Now think about that.
Yeah.
It's a dressing for an outside of a building. So anyway, it was an interesting show for me. We didn't have time. The reason we took so much time with that right now is because we didn't have time for it
last week to
say anything. Like you said, he was pretty fascinating, and I think we just wanted to hear him.
Yeah.
So we're moving on now, and we're going to start a new series. And one of the things, several times, on the other shows we've done, I heard Daryl and Virgil talk about Black Lives Matter. And they're saying that it's just another player in the social justice woke Christianity movement. Now, these are two black men saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, without investigating the movement, I would say that most people got on board with it because it was portrayed as a group that wanted to stop the injustices in society. And yes, there are injustices in society. There's nobody denying that. Everybody knows that. Everybody with a brain knows that.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute people found out about the leadership and their affiliations, most Christians should have run from it. Unfortunately, they haven't. So now they're mixing the movement with Christianity. Now, this is planned. You have to realize this is planned to blend the two. So having said all that, Daryl and Virgil have studied this group in depth. And I know we'll get the truth from them. I have no question about that. And also, they really don't talk about things that they have no personal experience in, you know, themselves.
Right.
So that's a good thing. It's like you and I talked, you know, it's one thing to talk about the hood and it's another to live in the hood. You know,
right.
And that's so true. But I believe in this season in our Christian walk, we need to examine everything thoroughly. We really do. So we need to take a look at, in-depth look at what's being set before us, especially if promoted as being for the greater good of society as a whole. You know, so today I'm here as a student myself to sit under these brothers. And I would like to know what they have to say, and I would like to learn from them also. I always think about it this way. If they're willing to put themselves out there with these truths and different issues, knowing that persecution will come, yet they still stand on truth, that's someone who loves the brother in action. You know, they're really doing that. They're standing out there fighting for truth, exposing truth, no matter what the consequences are. And that's someone we look to, these brothers, you know, they can say 1,000 times they love people, whatever, in life. But, you know, they prove it because they're actually out there doing stuff to help the brethren.
Right.
You know, I commend them for that.
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to give you their audio description. Do you have anything to say before I give you the audio description?
No. Like you, I'm going to be listening to learn.
Yeah, we're students today,
bro. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Me more so. Hey, look, I'm going to get up from either end. I'm going to get shot from the front and back.
Right.
So it doesn't matter to me. I get the arrow in the front and the arrow in the back. So, you know, so be it.
Sure.
So this audio description here, in this episode of the Just Thinking podcast, Daryl Harrison and Virgil Walker, Omaha, take an in-depth look at the organization known as Black Lives Matter and the Marxist worldview that fuels it. Now, this is against the Word of God, all of it. This is exactly what they're going to present, a case that is against the Word of God. Now, they recommend in their humor that you grab a notepad, pack a lunch, because this episode is 2.5 hours of unfiltered truth about the ungodly and violent entity known as BLM. Now, that told me a lot, you know. So I would be prepared for these two to start with a laugh before the show. They always do. They have a great sense of humor, so you have to forgive that. They can talk about serious subjects and, you know, do funny things during it. That's just who they are. And I think that relieves a lot of tension. You and I have done that.
Absolutely.
Remember the guy that was worshiping this crocodile or whatever, this god, and went under? You know. Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, you're trying to do a story.
Yeah, the crocodile had him for lunch. Yeah. Yeah, that was hilarious. That was hilarious. Wow.
And then the video, you couldn't watch the video without saying, well, that guy didn't work.
Yeah, that boy. That was.
I know.
That was stupid.
We have a hard time with that, you and I, because we do, we are both, we both have a sense of humor, but we both understand the seriousness. And listen, people, if you don't laugh, you would cry. So a lot of times you really need to, you know, let people be people and let them laugh.
Sure.
You know, it kind of helps with tension. So, again, I want to give credit where credit is due, and we need to advertise this. This is Daryl Harrison and Virgil Walker of Just Thinking Ministries. And the YouTube video is titled Black Lives Matter with a question mark. So, okay, whenever you're ready, you can start it from the beginning, and we're going to get the humor. We'll probably get the organ. I know we are, and other sound effects, but these two, you know, love each other, and we love them, and we're thankful for them.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. Now, I'm going to test it to see how the audio sounds, then you let me know.
Okay.
Oh yeah, that's from the hood. Okay.
that's from your neighborhood.
Yeah, that's right in my neighborhood.
That's a doo-wop.
You know,
that's a doo-wop in your neighborhood, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what they call a funky jam. Okay. All right. Whenever you hear that music, you think of a pimp coming down the street, all dressed up in his pimp hat and everything. That's what you think of. So, was that good? Was that sound good?
Well, all I got was the music. How am I supposed to know?
Okay. All right.
Okay. You need to get him to talk a little bit.
Welcome to the Just Thinking Podcast with hosts Dara Harrison and Virgil Walker.
All right, how does that sound?
Perfect after I quit dancing, but go ahead.
Okay,
that's perfect.
Okay.
All right.
Bringing you cultural apologetics as well as social issues from a biblical worldview. This is the Just Thinking Podcast. Let's think.
We're back. It's another edition of the Just Thinking Podcast.
How's that sound?
Perfect.
Okay.
I am Virgil Walker.
And I am Daryl Harrison. What's going on, Omar?
you came from them low notes, man.
I came from the bowels. That's what the Puritans would say, bro. The Puritans would say he came from the bowels.
That's really good. I didn't know you had those, man. Okay.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Dude.
Never underestimate what Daryl is going to do. Every time the listeners check in, they might just get used to whatever he's getting ready to do.
I keep telling y'all, man, don't let these eyeglasses fool you, bro.
never underestimate the eyeglasses or the bow tie. Look, that'll get you messed up every time.
Don't let it fool you, bro. That is not my whole story, bro.
Right.
I have multiple chapters in my book.
That's a blessing.
How you doing, player?
Man, I'm doing good, man. I'm glad we're back behind the microphone once again, man. We're getting ready to do what we do best. Man, it's always a joy, brother. I look forward to when we get together, what we're going to talk about, just getting a chance to chop up issues, challenges, you know, all the things that are going on in the world against the backdrop and lens of a biblical worldview. Man, I'm always, Always overjoyed to get with you. Looking forward to tonight. I know it's going to be a big, big, big show for our listeners. So they're definitely going to get their money's worth out of this one.
Yeah, you and I were talking leading up to this episode that it seems like it's been a lot longer than it has been since we were behind the mics, you know, recording an episode. But that's not the case. You know, we've done the most recent episode was just celebrating 100 episodes that we just surpassed not too long ago. And, you know, here we are right now also just past that 1.1 million download mark, bro. 1.1 million downloads. And right before that, the Assurance of Salvation episode, which God is just continually using in the lives of people. We continue to get great feedback and comments about how folks have been edified and fed and uplifted and encouraged by that episode, episode 99, Assurance of Salvation. And here we are again, man. Here we are August 16th as we record this episode. Huge topic, brother, on this episode here. And I know we've done a lot of promo up to this point, just to give our listeners a heads up, not only on what the topic is about, but just to let them know that this is probably going to be an extended episode. And what we mean by that is it's going to be at least 2 hours. And we may even go beyond that. But our listeners know already that the Just Thinking podcast is a long-form podcast, and they know how we go about our business. They know how we go about our business. This is an expositional podcast. It's not high level at all. We go deep into every single episode we do, and this episode is no different, bro. Anything you want to add, Omaha, before we get going?
No, man, I think you're spot on. I just want to go back to something you said earlier about what our listeners are doing. It's been amazing, man, and I know you've experienced this a ton, getting the inboxes, the inbox message, the DMs, of the people that have enjoyed the show, that have been benefited by the show, that have been edified by the show. A lot of folks, unbeknownst to you and I when we started, are leveraging what we're doing to help them understand how to navigate what they're dealing with in church culture. I mean, this is beyond what's happening in the world in which we live. This is beyond what's going on out there in the secular, you know, secular culture, so to speak. What we're beginning to see and experience is a lot of these issues, these isms, if you will, are beginning to find themselves creeping into churches. And as a result, pastors, leaders, and others are trying to figure out how to navigate this. I had a wonderful conversation with a dear brother this past week who wanted me to express to you great thanks and appreciation for the time that we've taken in the show to exposit, to explain, to exegete texts, to help them understand how to navigate some of these difficult issues. So I appreciate our listeners. I'm thankful for what we do. And to the point you made earlier, doing this kind of thing takes time. And as a result, we're going to take our time to do that this evening. So,
amen. Well said, Omaha. You know, so the topic of this episode is Black Lives Matter with a question mark. Black Lives Matter with a question mark. And I just want to go ahead and get us started into our subject matter today for this episode, Omaha. You know, in Ephesians 4:15, the Apostle Paul says that we are to speak the truth in love, right? And that's what we're going to try to endeavor to do today. That's what we're going to try to do today is we try to do in each and every episode of the Just Thinking podcast is to speak the truth in love. But having said that, I'm not naive to the fact that regardless of how loving you and I may endeavor to be, Omaha, in conveying biblical truth about the issue we'll be discussing today, there are going to be those who fancy themselves as members of what I call the, quote, tone police, unquote. Now, the tone police, if you're not familiar with that term, the tone police are people who will hear this episode, and notwithstanding the truth that we're presenting in it, they'll focus only on the inflection and tone of voice that we use, as if tone were the ultimate arbiter of what is true and loving. But I have something to say to the tone police out there. Okay, I don't want to get this out of the way right off the top. If your purpose in listening to this episode of the Just Thinking podcast is to merely audit us for tone, this probably is not the episode for you to listen to. In fact, my advice to you is to press the stop button right now. Go ahead and press the stop button. If you're a member of the tone police, go ahead and press the stop button because you're going to be writing a lot of tone police citations if you continue to listen to this episode over the next couple hours. You could be writing us a lot of tickets, okay?
Right.
So I just want to remind you guys that the same Apostle Paul who said in Ephesians 4:15 that we're to speak the truth in love also said in chapter 5, verse 11 of that same epistle in Ephesians, do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them. That's Ephesians 5:11. So, Omaha, I just wanted to offer that up as a public service announcement, if you will, to the toll police out there who might be listening to this episode before we begin. Any thoughts from
Absolutely.
You, bro?
No, I think it was smart to quote from Ephesians 4:15 and unpack that. Sadly and unfortunately, many connect biblical love with sentimentality. And so when they're talking about tone, they're looking for a tone that provides that subjective emotion, right? Biblical
right.
love, on the other hand, it acts in a manner that looks out for others above one's self-interest. Therefore, even as we warn others by saying things that are unpopular, we do indeed demonstrate what Paul is talking about in Ephesians 4:17 when he says to speak the truth in love. Our concern is not for acceptance or mere sentimentality. Our concern is for those who desire to know what is true. And so, man, I'm glad you put that announcement out there up front. Get that out of the way so we can go to work.
Well, let's go to work, man. Let's go ahead and get started. I want to begin our conversation on Black Lives Matter by reading from the Black Lives Matter website that you can find at blacklivesmatter.com. Blacklivesmatter.com. I'm quoting verbatim from the Black Lives Matter website. Quote, hashtag Black Lives Matter was founded in 2013 in response to the acquittal of Trayvon Martin's murderer. Black Lives Matter Foundation, Inc. is a global organization in the U.S., U.K., and Canada whose mission is to eradicate white supremacy and build local power to intervene in violence inflicted on black communities by the state and vigilantes. By combating and countering acts of violence, creating space for black imagination and innovation, and centering black joy, we are winning immediate improvements in our lives, unquote. That was a direct quote from the Black Lives Matter website at blacklivesmatter.com. Now, notwithstanding the broader mission of the Black Lives Matter organization, which I just read from its own website and in its own words, what I don't want our listeners to miss at the outset of our discussion here, Omaha, is that the primary impetus, the fundamental motivating force, the core impulse for the founding of this organization in the first place was the dissatisfaction of its founders with the outcome, okay? The dissatisfaction of its founders with the outcome of the trial of Trayvon Martin's killer, namely George Zimmerman. Now, in other words, the founders of Black Lives Matter were displeased and indignant that George Zimmerman had been acquitted. In other words, that Zimmerman was found not guilty of the charges against him by a jury of his peers. Now, I want to read again that very first sentence from the section I read earlier from the Black Lives Matter website. Quote, Black Lives Matter was founded in 2013 in response to the acquittal of Trayvon Martin's murderer, unquote. Now, the reason I read those words a second time, Omaha, is because intrinsic within them is a fundamental biblical principle that we as Christians would do well to consider, but which, to my knowledge anyway, has gone completely unaddressed in the years since the founding of the organization known as Black Lives Matter in 2013. Any thoughts from you, bro, before I continue on that train of thought?
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, the motivation for Black Lives Matter's beginnings. I thought to remind our listeners of the timeline of events that led to this pivotal moment. Now, if we can rewind to 2013 and remember that Barack Obama was the president of the United States at the time, and during his time in office, Obama sought to usher in a post-racial utopia. He actually spearheaded more racial division and animosity than any other president in recent memory. It began just a few short months after he entered office during his first term. Some may recall the beer summit when Obama had claimed that the beer summit that was necessary when Obama had claimed that police had, quote, acted stupidly during an arrest of the Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates Jr. by a white officer. Now, this statement would later be backtracked by Obama after getting the facts of the situation wrongly, right?
Mm-hmm.
This, however, wouldn't be the last time that Obama assumed motive on the basis of ethnicity with regard to the police. By the time we get to the Trayvon Martin death, it's March of 2012, and Obama's at the peak of his reelection campaign. Now, this is a campaign against Mitt Romney where Obama was feeding the country a steady diet of, quote, if you don't vote for me, it's because you're racist, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was March 23rd of 2012 when President Barack Obama, without all the facts of the case, stating his opinion regarding the Trayvon Martin case, famously said this, quote, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. End quote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, overnight after that comment, media coverage of the event would surpass the coverage of the presidential election as some news outlets began committing 50% of their airtime to discussing Trayvon Martin. Days after the president's comments, rallies began to take place in cities across the country. And on July 13th, after hearing all of the evidence in the Trayvon Martin case, the six-woman jury, including one minority, would find George Zimmerman not guilty. Now, here's what was interesting. They were given at the very last minute, this jury was given at the very last minute, the option of three choices. They could find Zimmerman guilty of second-degree murder, they could find him guilty of a lesser charge of manslaughter, or they could find him not guilty. So these were the three choices. The initial charge was actually a second-degree murder charge. But the judge put in this lesser charge in an effort to see if they could win a conviction. And while at the end of the day, no one knows how the fight between Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman began, all the forensic and witness testimony supported Zimmerman's story that Trayvon was on top of Zimmerman, wailing away, at which point George Zimmerman, fearing for his life, pulled out a gun and shot Trayvon Martin, killing him. I'll say this in close. The loss of human life is completely tragic, regardless of the circumstance by which it takes place. But equally tragic would be the adjudication of a case on the basis of either presidential politics and or sinful ethnic partiality. Mm. However, this is the basis for and the circumstances under which Black Lives Matter begins. And on July 13th, 2013, the acquittal of George Zimmerman happens. And on the 14th of 2013, July 2013, BLM co-founder Patrice Cullors reposts that message about the acquittal in the now famous hashtag Black Lives Matter.
I want to thank these men for giving us a review. Because when we were living this, right, the events and the news and the propaganda is all fresh, and then as time passes, you forget the chronology, you forget how things developed and how they ended and all that.
Right.
So I want to thank them for their review of the facts. Now.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, let's just say, and I know that the brothers are not, they're not for the acquittal or against the acquittal, right? I mean, they weren't. That's not their role here. They're trying to show the origin of Black Lives Matter. I'm sure they have their own personal opinion. Like the brother said, the loss of life is just tragic. I will say this: if I was on the jury, just me now,
mm-hmm.
if I was on the jury, I would have voted guilty. And let me just explain why. And again, these brothers are not saying, he should have been found guilty. I'm talking about Omaha and Brother Harris, right? They're not saying that, and they're not for acquittal or for finding him guilty. They are not involved in determining or stating their opinion. I just want to state mine. The reason why I will find him guilty is because you are a grown man, right? I'm a grown man. And for there to be a young teenager on top of me wailing away, you know what you do? You take your beating. I have been in enough schoolyard brawls at 3 o'clock. I didn't win all of them. I didn't win every brawl.
Right.
I got my block knocked off a few times. Right. So in life, you learn to take a beating, but you never take the life of a young man, or life is precious, more precious than your pride, right?
So that's right. I would agree with that.
Right. So it hurt my pride that he was, beating me senseless, like we say in the hood, he was knocking the snot out of me. Right? I mean, that's a term that we use. He knocked the snot out of you, right? Okay. So it hurts your pride as a man.
Yeah.
But you do not justify that by taking the life of a 17-year-old boy. And that's when
correct.
I would have said, you know what, hung jury, I'm not changing my mind. Because you got to do is lie there and take it, and he would have stopped and walked away. You did
That's
not
right.
have to pull out the gun and kill him, plain and simple.
Yep.
Right?
And you know what? I agree with that 100%. I agree with what you said 100%.
Yeah. And again, as a father, right, as a father, parent, knowing how – listen, when we're 17, 18 – I can look back and say, boy, I was stupid. I did some stupid things. I'm only here by the grace of God. I'm only here because God was merciful. I'm only here because God loved me. For me to take out a weapon and just blow somebody away that was just inches away from me is just criminal. It's just now.
That's right.
Now. If you tell me that somebody's coming into my house and someone is going to do me in so that they can do my wife and my daughter's harm, that's a different story.
Correct.
Right? Then I'll stand my ground and protect. But a one-on-one, fist fight, and I'm getting the snot knocked out of me.
Right.
Take it like a man. Just take it
that's
like
right.
a man. And then when he walks away, you clean your bloody nose, and that's that. Never use. That was, and again, it's not because, we got to get the white man. No. It's not about that. It's about life. Life. That's all it's about. And
that's
I agree with you.
I mean, that's a good way to look at it, and that is exactly right. There's got to be alternative things that you can do. You have to think of the alternative things that he could have done, the police officer.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
Yeah. There's options.
Look, it's a known fact. Let's say I'm out in the woods. I'll give you a perfect example in nature. If I'm out in the woods and I happen to come upon a grizzly bear and he runs me down and he mauls on me, the number one instinct is play dead. Play dead.
Oh, geez.
I couldn't do that. Yeah. You are not going to win. And so what happens? The grizzly bear, once he sniffs you and you're playing just dead and you're not lifting an arm, he just gets up and walks away. That's what you do in a case like Trayvon Martin. The kid's wailing on you.
Exactly.
Just play dead.
Yeah.
He'll get up and walk away. That's what he'll do. The kid had no weapon.
That's right.
What weapon did the kid have? He had no weapon. He had nothing.
Yeah.
So his pride was hurt. His manhood was hurt. And, you know, this guy, whatever his name is, George Zimmerman, he was a wannabe cop. He wanted to be a cop. He wanted to be a police officer.
Right.
You know, and that's why he was mad because, again, a 17-year-old, 18-year-old just took him to school. An 18-year-old took him back to 3 o'clock in the schoolyard, and he couldn't live with it. So he says, you know what, I'm just going to take his life. And and George Zimmerman is a man without remorse. He's got no remorse.
Right.
You know,
right.
He's walking the streets today like if I had to do it again, I'll do it again. No remorse.
Yeah, that's see, you know, when you start putting I always say put your emotions beside, but that does stir up with me because I have sons too.
Right.
And I, you know what I mean? I've been through the teen and they've been in fights, things like that, but you know, not to this extent. And so I can relate to exactly what you're saying there. And I mean, how would you feel as a parent, you know, if that happened to your child? I mean, you can't even imagine that. You can't imagine that.
There's
a lot of anger. I could see the anger just rising because I'm getting angry. You know, I get angry. I have to watch it because I could feel the emotion rise up in me when you were talking, how angry I was at that officer. You know, I could feel that inside of me. And I say, okay, I need to put that aside because they're trying to get, okay, how was this group? How did this group start and why did it start? And, you know, what are they doing? And that's what we're getting at. And they did, you know, have to go back. You know, to me, it's interesting something they said, too. It's in the U.S., U.K., and Canada. It's a global movement. Well, I was thinking about that. Those are three countries that have not adopted the agenda. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As well.
Right.
It was a leavening. You know what I mean?
Right.
They weren't completely leavened with socialism yet. Canada, kind of on the fence, you know?
Right.
The U.S.
Right.
and the U.K., it's been, you know, they haven't been leavened with Marxism, or they hadn't been during that time. So that was just an interesting thing I thought about.
Yeah.
I agree with you, bro, on the other. I agree. I mean, I'm with you on that. And I can honestly say...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I would have convicted the cop. I would have convicted.
Yeah.
I would have put guilty. Yes.
Yeah, and of course, I know that my vote was not going to convict. I mean, I would have said guilty, and the other 11 said not guilty. But at least I would have produced a hung jury. Where he has to be tried again. You see, because
exactly.
I come from a time period where you didn't fight dirty. See, in the old westerns, you never shot a man in the back. That was one.
Right.
One of the rules of the old west is you never shot a man in the back. Number two, you never shot an unarmed man. That's number two. If you were gonna fight someone, if you were in a saloon and you were drunk and you were gonna fight someone outside, they would hang you. In the old West, if you shot a man who wasn't armed.
That's right.
And the number three rule in the West was you didn't steal a man's horse.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the three main, you know. So you shooting an unarmed boy.
Right.
That's, you know. Now, let's say Trayvon Martin is on top of a woman. and he's knocking the snot out of a woman, now we can talk about her using a gun. Right? Because it's the opposite sex. It's a weaker vessel. But when it comes to a burly man, because George Zimmerman is burly, he's big. Right? He's a stocky guy. You mean to tell me? No. See, it's different when it comes to man on woman. It's different rules. But when it's a man on man or a man on a boy. And he's unarmed. And you use your gun? And listen, we're not talking about an elderly. We're not talking about Trayvon Martin beating a man who's 70 years old. We're talking about Trayvon Martin smacking someone around who's in his 30s, if I'm not mistaken. So there's different rules. There's different rules.
Yeah.
And that's why you got to split the hairs. Right? You got to look at this and say, no. The code of manhood, the code of manhood does not allow you to pull out a gun on an unarmed teenager and just shoot him point blank. You're not a man
that's
if
right.
you do that. You're not a man.
That's
You're
right.
not a man. So, and, you know, listen, we know how Reverend Al Sharpton started the same way Black Lives Matter started. They're race baiters, right? Listen, Reverend Sharpton is a hustler, and their hustle is victimhood.
Mm-hmm.
And someday Sharpton will go the way of the dodo, and someday Black Lives Matter will go the way of the dodo, and some other group is going to arise.
Yeah.
Right? With a different name.
Yeah.
Why? Because there's money in race. Just like there's money in preaching. See, the pimp preachers know that there's money in preaching. It's just a hustle. It's just a hustle to these people. That's all it is.
Well, Black Lives Matter, I mean, we can prove that already because they went to England, and the England division or group or the splitter group or whatever they are, I don't know, they changed their name over there to Black Liberation Movement.
Wow.
That's what BLM stands for. So they were Black Lives Matter is now Black Liberation Movement over there. And they've raked in, I don't know, did I say it was like £6 million or something? Maybe it was £3 million, which would be pretty close to $5 million. And that's what they're known in the UK now as.
Right.
So, you know, you're right with that. They just move on and create a different group, you know. But that's pretty telling because where did the Black Lives Matter go? Black Lives Matter in that? No.
Right.
You know, I mean, with that. It was about money. So
money. It's about money. It's about money. It's about the hustle. It's about the hustle. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
How can I get rich? How can I get rich like the Reverend Jesse Jackson and the Reverend Al Sharpton? How can I turn this into an never-ending cash machine? How? Okay, create a movement.
Yeah.
Create a movement.
Right.
That's all. And put yourself on top of the incorporation papers and start cashing checks. That's all.
Right.
See?
Well, if your driving force from the onset is dissatisfaction with outcomes, you're always going to have bad outcomes on things. You know?
Right.
Outcomes that you don't agree with. Like, I don't agree. I think that officer should have been found guilty. And like you said, I'd have hung a jury for that.
Right.
You know, and that would have hung the jury, retry him. They only need one person in the next trial to say guilty. You know, I mean, how many times are they going to go through this, you know, over and over again with the trial? But the thing is that, you know, not every outcome is going to be the way we want it.
Right.
And that's what they're trying to change. That's what this group is trying to change outcomes. How do you do that? That's setting yourself up as gods, you know, trying to change, because God is sovereign. So, you know, I'm have a problem with this already, but
right,
big problem
right.
already.
Sure.
But I mean, I would
sure.
be just. I agree with you 100% on what you said, Trayvon. I do.
Yeah. And one last thing. One last thing. In England, every time I visited England, I was always cared for and housed and driven around by black people. Okay. I came to England the first time. I had a friend, a pastor in Forest City, North Carolina, named Ronnie Scott. Ronnie Scott was in the army. He was a pastor in North Carolina. And so I was preaching at his church, and that weekend there was a pastor there from London. And the pastor from London was Jamaican black. You know, his family had moved. He was born in London, but you know what I mean? His skin color and the origin of his family was from Jamaica. They were Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time I went to England, every church I ever went to in England, they were all black.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, these black people in England made the black people here look bad. Why?
Yeah.
Listen, over there, I mean, they spoke perfect English. They could read. They could write.
Yes.
They were every one of them was a professional. And I said, "Who are you?" "Oh, I'm a coroner." "You're a coroner? You mean to tell me you do autopsies?" "Yes, I do autopsies." "The other one, what are you?" "I'm a nurse." "The other one, what are you?" "This guy, what do you do? "I'm a banker." "You're a banker?" "Yes." "Another guy, what do you do?" "I own my own tailor shop." "Really?" He says, "Come, I'm going to make you a suit." I went to his tailor shop. He took my measurements. Before I left England, I had a suit. Right? Listen, every one of these people were professionals.
Yes.
They rolled. I went to their homes. They owned it. They weren't renters. They owned. What in the heck would Black Lives Matter have to offer these professionals? These people aren't victims. They're overachievers.
Yes.
That's why it shocks me that Black Lives Matter would want to go to England, because I never met a poor black person in England. Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Well, the thing is, over there too, they like you said, they're, you know, there's not been a problem over there, you know, with us until Black Lives Matter showed up over there. And if you notice now, even when there's protests,
right?
And we're talking about, again, you know, different things going on, like the lockdowns and stuff.
Right.
You have the blacks and whites together marching still,
right,
against the lockdowns. So they stick together. You know, there's none of that really matters over there. Maybe that's, you know, really, it doesn't. I mean, not with the normal people who live there.
Right.
It's the government that's pushing it, not the people. That's what I'm trying
to
say.
Right, right.
Because, you know, there's a diversity in London. You know that.
Yeah,
a big diversity of people in London. And basically, you know, they've all done well. They all do well together.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
They're Londoners. They're Londoners. That's what they call, you know, that's what they are. And so, you know, that's how they consider themselves. And,
I couldn't believe it. I said, "You guys don't have a hood here?" They said, "What's that?" I said, "You know, a hood." I couldn't explain it. It's like, "No, we don't have that here, sir. We don't have that.
Yeah.
We don't know what you're talking about." You know,
yeah, they have one bad area, and that's Brixton. Brixton can be iffy, but you have a lot of gang members, you know, in one area there. But that's you know, that's all I've ever seen over there.
All right.
You know, but no, totally different world over there compared to here.
Sure.
So
now here we have a history of slavery. I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here we have people who were offered. Who were told they were going to get 40 acres and a mule, and they didn't get it. I get that. I get that,
yep.
The whole history thing. I get that.
Yep.
But in England?
Yeah.
In England?
Mm-hmm.
In England? You know, when I went to Jamaica, it's amazing. When I went to Jamaica, I met some of the most educated people in Jamaica. They were brilliant. And you know what they told
yes.
me? I said, you guys, your English is just impeccable. And they said to me,
mm-hmm.
we speak the Queen's English.
Yeah.
I said,
exactly.
Oh, excuse me. I said, excuse me.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. No, sir, we speak the Queen's English. It's like they're tied
yes.
to England. It's like they have this pride, right? That they that
yeah.
they're connected to England. It's like it's amazing. There's no
yes.
there's no, you know, the white man hates me or, you know, I'm down because the white man. There's none of that over there. I didn't
right.
see it.
Right.
And I've been to Jamaica lots
yes.
of times. I didn't see that. I saw them gravitating
Listen.
Towards England. Reclaiming their
yes.
heritage with England, not pushing it away.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is if you're born in England, it doesn't matter where your ancestors came from. You're British.
Right.
If
right.
you're born in England. It doesn't matter if your ancestors, where they were from, you're British.
Right.
So you would say, well, your brother over there, if you have a black, you know, a brother who's black,
sure.
he's British.
Right, right.
He's not,
now, I,
you know, that's
yeah.
what he is.
Right. I highlight
that's
that.
That's the mentality.
I highlight that because I come from a place where, you know, you have to say you're from two places. You're from Africa
mm-hmm.
and America. You're African American. See, that's our mindset
mm-hmm.
here where you have two identities. Right?
Correct.
I'm Irish
yep.
American,
yep.
I'm Italian American, I'm Hispanic American. Here, you have to identify,
mm-hmm.
but not in England. In England, they don't know any of that stuff. There's no two
no.
identifications. There's just one.
Nope.
Right?
That's
so that's
right.
why I'm shocked that Black Lives Matter would try to start something over there when those people, they, what are you talking about? What?
Yeah,
I only know that I'm black because you're telling me I'm black. That's why I know I'm black.
Well, the establishment is—it's the establishment that's doing that. It's not the people.
Right. Right,
so the people
right.
are just as confused as the rest of the world about what's going on. What is this? In fact,
yeah.
a lot of the people from England would benefit listening to this because they're trying to put it all together. What happened?
Right.
You know.
Right. Right.
What happened? So if they, you know, maybe I need to share this in England
sure.
so that, you
sure.
know, they get an understanding of what's going on because this is foreign to them. This is all
mm-hmm.
foreign
right.
to their
Absolutely.
Thinking, to their way of life. So, yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. Sorry I took up so much time.
No,
but,
that's okay.
That, we can blame Daryl and Omaha for this.
Yes. For playing.
Because they
yep.
started it. Okay, here it is.
Yep.
You know, Omaha, first of all, thanks for that background. I appreciate you bringing us some context around this, some much-needed context, as a matter of fact. I was thinking, you know, how the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution states the following, okay? Quote, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused, shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed, again, this is the accused has the right to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have a compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense, unquote. That is the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution. Now, I want to reiterate here that the Sixth Amendment declares that in all criminal prosecutions, all, including for the accused, whoever the accused might be, shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed. Now, I need to point out here that the Sixth Amendment, as well as the other nine amendments that comprise the Bill of Rights, applies equally and impartially to every citizen of the United States of America without regard to his or her ethnicity, sex, religion, or sociocultural background. Every person within the sound of my voice who is a citizen of the United States of America can rightfully avail themselves of all of the rights and protections afforded them under the Bill of Rights of the United States Constitution. Every citizen. Now, that said, I would dare say that there is not one person listening. There's not one person listening to me right now who, were they to find themselves in the midst of a situation or circumstance such as would warrant a trial by jury, who would not immediately take advantage of the legal protections that are rightfully theirs under the Sixth Amendment. Not one person. Now, I say that because as it relates to an organization like Black Lives Matter, which, according to its own website, was founded solely on the grounds that George Zimmerman was acquitted by a jury of his peers, it behooves each of us to put ourselves in the place of George Zimmerman, or for that matter, in the place of any other person who has been accused of such serious offenses as Zimmerman was. Now, just to point back to something you said in your last commentary, Omaha, I don't say that in an attempt to defend George Zimmerman or conversely to minimize the fact that Trayvon Martin lost his life. I say that to point us to the foundational issue of impartiality. Impartiality with regard to how we are to render judgments and draw conclusions in certain situations. Now, why is that important? Why do I say that impartiality is a foundational issue here? Well, the reason is because the biblical doctrine of impartiality is one of the most crucial yet most underappreciated and undervalued doctrines in the entirety of Scripture. I mean, when you consider that reality against the socio-political milieu in which we find ourselves today, not to mention the current ecclesiastical milieu, particularly as it relates to increasing numbers of professing evangelicals and evangelical churches aligning themselves with Black Lives Matter, not even being fully aware of what that organization actually stands for, it is vital that we understand and rightly apply what Scripture teaches and what God demands of us as believers with regard to being impartial in all our judgments. Now, remember, the primary reason Black Lives Matter as an entity was begun in the first place is because its founders were angry over the outcome of a trial indisputably conducted in accordance with the rights that each of us have as a citizen of this country to due process of law under the United States Constitution, regardless of whether we are the accused or the accuser. Now, the founders of Black Lives Matter weren't indignant over any procedural, judicial, or constitutional violations in terms of how the trial of George Zimmerman was conducted. In other words, they had no objective reasons whatsoever apart from their own prejudicial biases and motives as a basis for their resentment and outrage over what transpired in that trial. Had they had any complaint on that basis, okay, had they had a complaint that something procedural, judicial, unconstitutional occurred, then their indignation would have been both understandable and warranted. But that was not the case. The founders of Black Lives Matter were simply indignant over the fact that a young black man had been killed by someone who was not black, and that a jury had the temerity to not render a guilty verdict on the same basis that the founders of Black Lives Matter desired a guilty verdict to be handed down, namely on the basis that Trayvon Martin was black and George Zimmerman wasn't. In other words, the founders of Black Lives Matter wanted the members of the jury in the Zimmerman trial to completely disregard the oath that each of them swore, which under Florida law reads, quote, to render a true verdict. Every juror under Florida law must recite this oath. Quote, render a true verdict according to the law and the evidence, unquote. But instead, The founders of Black Lives Matter want the jury to show partiality against the defendant solely on the basis of Trayvon Martin's skin color. Now, I ask you, Omaha, who of us would want that from a jury had we been the one on trial?
Let me just interject here real quickly. And, of course, I just want to say that people like Reverend Al Sharpton, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, and all these race baiters and these race baiting organizations, they make up excuses why they started. They look for an right. You said it best in many, many shows that these people, they use a crisis to interject their agenda.
Correct.
Right. They don't look. Their heart is not for Trayvon. You know what? You know why we know their heart is not for Trayvon? Because with all the money that they've gotten, Black Lives Matter, I'm talking about, did they start a scholarship in the name of Trayvon Martin? No. Have they helped young black men with their education? No. So they're not for Trayvon Martin or young men like him. In fact, they are hoping that more young black men get slaughtered, so that it'll be a fundraising drive.
Well, you got it already, what they're going to say. You just nailed it, and you didn't even know it. You don't even know it. But that's exactly the point that they're bringing out, you know.
Right.
If they don't get the result they want, you know, then at the end of the day, it doesn't help their cause any, you know.
Look,
they say,
it's just like,
you know, they say they want a certain result, but that result doesn't help the cause. So you have to say, you know, that we know that out of chaos comes order. That's their motto.
Right.
You know, so, you know, they live for these kind of things going on is what I'm trying to say.
Right, because then
they
have what? Look, it's just like people like Billy Graham's son, right? Franklin Graham and Samaritan's Purse. Now they'll tell you, oh, we don't want another hurricane, we don't want another earthquake, we don't want another disaster. But those organizations raise money off. How do you think Franklin Graham gets paid? He gets paid from
disasters.
Well, brother, how could you say that? Well, look, the guy gets what, $1 million a year salary? Where does that money come from? From disaster relief money that comes in. He does a commercial on Fox News. He says, let's go help the people in Haiti, blah, blah. The money rolls in, and Samaritan Purse stays open for another quarter.
Yep.
That's what they do. And people need to figure that out.
Yes.
It's going
to be discord and problem after problem after problem. It's going to be never-ending discord for them.
Right.
That's the goal. Because that's what keeps it moving.
It's like the politician. The politician says, look at this administration. This administration doesn't acknowledge you. This administration wants to take your rights. This administration, and vote for me. And then when they get in there, what do? They forget you.
Yes, exactly.
They forget you.
Yep.
They turn their backs on you until the next 4 years and hoping that you're stoked up with marijuana so that you can forget what they did to you the first time so you can vote for them again. This is what they do. And
they're using and abusing people in them.
Right.
This is,
right.
You know, they're being used and abused. People are.
Right.
And it's not benefiting anybody but them. They have to, you know, you have to, everybody has, you need to see this. This is, you know, this is about moving the agenda forward. This has got nothing to do about lives.
Right,
you know.
That's it. Just look. I lived in a town, and I'm going to be very short. I lived in a town It was called Fort Plain, New York. Fort Plain.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to living in Fort Plain, New York, I live in Carlisle, New York. Prior to living in Carlisle, New York, I lived in Little Falls, New York, okay? So in all these
mm-hmm.
places that I ever lived in all these places, after dark, I never got stopped in Carlisle, New York. I never
mm-hmm.
got stopped in Little Falls, New York. Never.
Right.
Never. Okay? And but all of a sudden, I'm noticing that every time I go out in my car after dark in this little town called Fort Plains, New York, I'm getting pulled over. So you know what I did? I stopped going out at night. I did everything
wow.
during the day. And you know what?
Yeah.
I wasn't pulled over anymore. Why? Because I didn't give them a chance. You change.
Right.
What you have to do is, if there's a police force hard up for money and likes to give tickets, then you just change your habits. That's what you do.
Yeah.
In order to what? In order to make it. That's what you do.
Yes. Yes.
And that's that. I'm driving on the throughway, and I see troopers. And where I'm at, every person pulled over who's getting a ticket from the trooper is white as milk.
Yeah.
White as milk.
I
honestly
get pulled over. I have no idea.
Right? And I can't say, look at them troopers after the minorities. No. The person is white as
right.
milk.
We get pulled over, too.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
especially
again,
when they're ready to make tickets, when it's ticket time, they need their
right.
quota of tickets.
Exactly.
Get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what it
yeah.
is. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's everybody gets, it's, you know, equal opportunity.
Yep.
All right, I took enough time. Let me put these guys back on. Listen, these guys are stirring me up today. Listen, this is a great audio. they're stirring me up.
Yeah.
Had either of us been the one on trial, who in the world of us would want to know that any of our any member of the jury in whose hands our fate rests was already partial against us? Now, of course, now, given the reality that every juror is a sinner, okay, an oath of any kind carries significance and weight only insofar as the individual swearing to it intends in his or her heart to abide by the words contained in that oath. I mean, it's no different from a man and a woman who recite marriage vows to each other. The words themselves possess no inherent power to ensure that a husband remains faithful to his wife, or conversely, that a wife remains faithful to her husband. Ultimately, right, ultimately the words we speak, the promises we make, the oaths that we take, all boil down to the intent of our heart to abide by the words of those promises, oaths, and vows. Now, I say that in light of such sobering verses as Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, which says, "Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." That's Genesis 6, 5. When Peter and John encountered the sorcerer in Acts chapter 8, verse 22, they said to the sorcerer, "Therefore repent of this wickedness of yours and pray the Lord that if possible, the intention of your heart may be forgiven you." So again, I cite those two verses because it's the condition of our heart that makes our words effectual, not the words themselves. Thoughts on that, Omaha?
Yeah, wow, you covered a lot of ground. I want to reiterate, man, something that I believe that you said that was incredibly important, which is the issue of impartiality. You started by saying it's a key component of the Sixth Amendment and even anchored it, more importantly, as a biblical doctrine and as the primary issue that we have to address. And now the genesis of this movement, the genesis of the movement of Black Lives Matter is steeped impartiality. It's the very thing, unfortunately, that Black Lives Matter claims that they're trying to fight against. But that's exactly what they're promoting. The BLM, quote, response, right? That's because that's what the issue was. They wanted to respond to the acquittal of the Trayvon Martin case. to the point you made earlier, it had nothing to do with a lack of evidence, had nothing to do with invalid testimony, inaccurate eyewitness accounts, or unsubstantiated facts. The BLM response was steeped in subjective, sinful, ethnic partiality. Mm-hmm. However, here's where my analysis, bro, might seem to go a little bit off the rails. Because here's where I would argue that the outcome of the Zimmerman case and other cases like them are exactly what these women from Black Lives Matter actually desire. What I mean is that these women nor their cause actually benefit from getting their stated desire outcome, the desired outcome of their rally cry that Black Lives Matter. There is no way to advance the Black Lives Matter cause if justice is ever to be served. Now,
I need some Hammond on this one. I need some Hammond on that point right there. That's a brilliant point. Brilliant point,
yeah.
Omaha. Would you mind, brother, please reiterating that point once more?
Yeah. I'll start back and just kind of walk through this. I want to argue this, that the outcome of the Zimmerman case and other cases like them are exactly what these women that have started this movement desire. What I mean is that these women nor their cause actually benefit from the stated desired outcome of their rally cry that Black Lives Matter.
Wow.
There is no way to advance the BLM cause if justice is ever to be served. The advance of the BLM cause is only benefited by emotional responses devoid of facts. The BLM cause is only benefited by inciting violence. It's advanced by increasing ethnic hatred and by establishing the permanent victimhood of those they claim to be helping. Now, furthermore, black lives have never mattered to Black Lives Matter. Let me be clear. Black lives have never mattered to Black Lives Matter. The organization Black Lives Matter uses the bodies of dead black men, primarily at the hands of white officers, to promote a modern-day race hustle. Now, they do this to advance their own political power grab. Now, here's what I mean. Let me make this case. Here's what I mean. We're all familiar with the names George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, Tony McDade, Robert Fuller. We're familiar with these names, Elijah McClain. I could go on. But let's stop and ask a question. Since these lives matter to Black Lives Matter, let's ask one question. How much money has gone to the families of those from Black Lives Matter? Now, Daryl, I search far and wide, man, and truth be told, I can't find a dime, and I mean not one dime. Now, I would love for someone to prove me wrong on this. And here's what I do know. I do know that Black Lives Matter has benefited from the deaths of each of the people that I've mentioned. In fact, Fred Lucas, author of the book Tainted by Suspicion, The Secret Deals of Electoral Chaos, The Electoral Chaos of Disputed Presidential Elections, he wrote an article that was carried by the Daily Caller. And Lucas cites 18 corporations, and he cites these based upon the corporations the corporations themselves. These are the corporations said what themselves, the money they've given directly to the Black Lives Matter group. These corporations include DoorDash, $500,000. $500,000 by Deckers. $10 million over 10 years to 12 groups, including Black Lives Matter. $500,000 by Gatorade. $250,000 by Microsoft. $500,000 by Glossier Skincare. $500,000 by Airbnb, $350,000 by Unilever, $500,000 by Nabisco, $500,000 by Dropbox. Brother, I could go on and on and on. Now, you've got to ask yourself a question. If the black lives of those murdered actually mattered to Black Lives Matter, how are they caring for those black lives? Now, let me get real for just a second, brother. We've been doing this show for 2 years, and here's what I know about you and me. I know that my life matters to you. There are many ways that I could tell our audience that my life matters to you. For example, if I told you I had a financial situation that wouldn't allow me to make ends meet, I know exactly what you would say to me before we ended the conversation. You would say to me, hey bro, let me ask you, is there anything you need from me? And I mean anything. I mean, we've had conversations along those lines about other issues. Guess what? And I would know exactly what you meant. I would know that if something happened to me and to my family, you and your family would be there for me. And I know this because my life matters to you. Now, I haven't lost my life, nor has any of my loved ones' lives been lost. But if they had, if I or anyone in my family had lost their lives, I can guarantee you this, that those to whom my life matters would step up and do whatever was necessary to take care of any need or any shortfall that my family and I would experience. Why? Because that's what it means for someone's life to matter. By that standard, how does Black Lives Matter stack up? But I've done my research into the names of those who BLM claims that they're standing for. What I've found is that those families that have been impacted most by the loss, they seem to be moving forward far from the oversight and care of the Black Lives Matter movement. For example, BLM is no longer seeking justice for Trayvon. You see, the BLM movement isn't interested in justice. Black Lives Matter only finds benefit in dead black bodies. Justice is irrelevant to advance their cause. I know we're going to go over a great deal of ground to cover, and so I just want to be clear that the BLM movement is all about standing tall on the dead bodies of black men by white officers for the purpose of destroying America and replacing it with the reign and terror witnessed in video clips that headline the nightly news.
And to that I would add so that they can also line their pockets.
Yes, absolutely. Wow, that was a lot of revelation there, you know?
Right.
A lot of revelation on this movement. I think, where did we stop, by the way, so I can write it down?
We stopped it at the 32 minute mark, 32 minutes, 30 second mark. 32:30.
Okay.
And we didn't
we
get
might
further
go back
because
and let
I kept
it finish.
Interrupting.
No, that's okay. No, we can go back and just get that, capture that thought next week,
absolutely,
you know, that he just
absolutely
put out. Because I'm going to tell you something. A lot of these agencies, you know, again, lives are being lost and more will be lost. And this group financially is supporting the very thing they claim to be against, you
right
know.
Right.
So that was interesting to me. So thank you so much.
And when there is no shooting of a black man and money starts to dry up, they're praying for a new shooting. Why?
Yeah.
Because then they can get their drums out again and they can start banging and making noise and lighting up cities at night and causing chaos and forcing the corporations to do what? To give money. So great audio as always. Can't wait to get back into
thank
this.
You.
These guys are phenomenal. And you're doing a great job. And pretty soon, in two more broadcasts, you will be hitting the 250 episode mark of the End Time News Report, which
wow
is a great milestone. 250.
Well, thank you.
And people have to remember that every year we take the holidays off. So if
mm-hmm
we were working during the holidays, you know, when you say 250, that equals 5 years. Yeah, but really, you know, you're missing two weeks out of every year because we take the holidays off. We play reruns.
Yeah.
Or we play audio.
Or a few sicknesses. A few sicknesses.
Well, yeah, but we always, yeah, we make those up. We make those up.
Yeah, we do.
But,
we do.
Yeah. So you got a few more weeks before you hit that milestone, and that's going to be a great, great show. So, my
well, we
sister,
thank the Lord for that.
Yeah, thank you for the great job that you do. I can't wait for next week, and you have the last word.
Well, I would say, you know, I'm learning a lot from this, and I hope you are too. And I think, you know, next week we'll just go right back and dig into it and find out what's going on here. This is about, you know, Christianity versus apostasy, and we don't want to go down the wrong path. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Bye.
Ooh.